Hi everyone, I'm Heidi Rogers, and this is Tell the Others. I wanted to create a place for meaningful conversation, life lessons, and parenting hacks. Sometimes I chat to interesting people, sometimes I answer questions about parenting or life stuff, and sometimes I just rant. These episodes are filled with stories and insights that made me say, ugh, I just have to tell the others. So let's dive in to hear what we can learn today. First off, child is 10. I have a more of a broad wish. Describe more in details the overlap of autism and ADHD in girls. What have you tried? She has a 504 plan at school, but needs more support and hoping she qualifies for an IEP. So what is happening? In third grade, she was diagnosed with anxiety. This winter, she was diagnosed with ADHD. She currently has a 504, but school is doing a special ed evaluation for ADHD and educational autism. She's also gifted and talented, so she's 2E, twice exceptional. She has a unique learning profile, and her 504 is not helping or supportive as she needs, especially with writing. She will use talk to text. In fourth, I'm just going to make this bigger. There we go. In fourth grade, the most she has written is two sentences. They will also test for dyslexia and dysgraphia. We will not have the initial evaluation meeting until summer, but I'm curious about 2E and ADHD and autism in girls as she exhibits characteristics of both, such as a lack of executive functioning, task completion, sensory sensitivity, rigid eating patterns. She also is a perfectionist and has OCD tendencies. The school psych sees traits of autism, although she said she has doubts she would be medically diagnosed with autism. So in summary, I want to learn more about 2E with the overlap of autism and ADHD in girls. Okay. So, first of all, this territory, this area, I guess, I don't know what else to, how to describe it, where we're talking about autism and ADHD overlap, especially in girls, is tricky. The Venn diagram, I say, is if this is ADHD and this is autism, instead of it being a Venn diagram like this, it's actually better to just see it as one circle, because the hard part is ADHD traits and autistic traits can often be similar. You could make the case that ADHD traits could also be autistic traits and vice versa. So it's just, I find it very hard to try to tease out what is what, because you literally could apply, like, say, sensory sensitivity that could go either way. So I prefer to say neurodivergent, but I understand that when you're talking about funding or supports in school, you need to kind of nut it out. But I often just encourage parents to go both, just say these are autistic traits and these are ADHD traits, and almost like you're doing it identical or doing it twice. The second thing I want to say is I cannot stress enough the importance of finding someone who is a specialist in this area, but not just in a specialist with ADHD and autism, but a specialist with girls, because that is like, wow, that is just one of the holy grails when it comes to autism diagnoses. It is so hard for a lot of clinicians to even know what they're looking for and to even know what an autistic girl looks like, because unfortunately, the way that the DSM was written, all of the research that we have of the preliminary research, obviously now it's different, but in the 70s, 80s, 90s, a lot of the research was done, or not a lot, all of the research was done on boys, because for a long time they thought autism was something that only impacted boys. So it was only until later that they realized, and later being like maybe the 90s, mid late 90s, where they went, researchers went, oh, this is wild. This is also in girls, you know, where everybody else was like, yeah, could have told you that. But you will find a lot of clinicians, a lot of psychologists, a lot of pediatricians, a lot of psychologists who will meet a autistic girl and say to the kid, to the parents, she's fine. She's not autistic. Because they come from kind of a old school, just ignorant place of not knowing what it looks like. I even would include myself in this of being guilty of this maybe 10 years ago, of not being able to assess it and see it. Because I too didn't know, because it's like, it's in some ways, it's like, it's not our fault. Like, that's how we're just going by how we were trained and what we were taught at uni. So, but even new grads, still, it's not taught like as what it should be, you know? So I just want to say that it is very hard. And if you're going to go to get an assessment for a girl specifically, they can't just have on their website like, I do ADHD and autism assessments. Like, that's not good enough. Like, as for me to consider them someone who has like a specialty, it needs to be more like, I want to hear them on a podcast, or I want to read a blog article they wrote, or I want to them to demonstrate that they have a deep understanding about how autism shows up differently in girls. And one of the key ways that it shows up differently is the masking. The masking is off the charts, which is why so often parents will tell me, I'm so disappointed. I got the school questionnaire back and it said that they don't see anything. You know, she's the perfect angel at school. So common. And I always say to parents, like, no, this is good. This is supportive of the diagnosis and supportive of the assessment, because that's usually what we see with girls, is this like angel at school and then this hellion at home, where parents are like, I don't know how the school sees the same person in my kid. ADHD as well, not just autism, but ADHD as well. So I just want to say that because I think that's important for everybody to hear. So let me go to my notes that I wrote. Okay. So the other thing that is relevant for her in particular is the giftedness part. So the 2E, for those of you that don't know what that means, it's just twice exceptional, E for exceptional. It means that her giftedness is what's often going to mask a lot of her challenges. And then the challenges will mask the giftedness. You know what I mean? So they kind of work together. And so a lot of times schools and clinicians will only see one. They won't kind of look at the, like, zoom out and look at the whole picture. And so, like, say, for example, with her writing or just wanting to use talk to text, a lot of times practitioners won't realize what's actually going on there. And meaning that so much of what happens for neurodivergent girls is there's an internal crisis, battle, implosion. It's not so much external. And so there's like this gap between the ability and then the output. So what I'm actually capable of, and then what I show you, what I demonstrate, is often wildly off and not accurate. And that's a common situation with 2E kids, but definitely with girls. So these are the key things that are sort of different, I think, with girls. So I just want to go through that first of what is different in girls. So one is the internalizing rather than externalizing. So like the H in ADHD stands for hyperactive. And a lot of people will say to me, oh, no, she's not bouncing off the walls. You know, I look at some boys that have ADHD and I'm like, oh, I can tell that kid has ADHD because they're bouncing off the walls. And so people often think that their kid, or they don't have it because they're not all over the place and like bouncing on their chair, bouncing their knee, you know. And the difference is the H of hyperactive is often for girls in the brain. So, like saying things like, I can't get my brain to shut up, or my brain talks so much, or my brain is always ruminating, or, you know, thinking about things. My brain is the hyperactive muscle instead of my legs or my arms. And I just think that's important to know. But because the internalizing thing is different than the externalizing, that's then going to look like anxiety, perfectionism, and shutting down, which you have already seen. Masking is the second one. Copying social behaviors rather than genuinely understanding why certain social rules or social things exist. It's more, this is what I'm supposed to do, and then trying to fit in. And working really hard on kind of playing a role of like, this is what a good girl or a good friend or a good student looks like. Sensory sensitivities often get labeled as they are a picky kid, picky eater, picky about, you know, sensory stuff, tags, wet clothes, whatever. And then dramatic, drama queen, so emotional, too sensitive. Those would often be labels to describe neurodivergent girls. And then the rigid eating patterns, yes, that is classic girl, which is girl neurodivergent, which is also sensory based and not behavioral, which a lot of times, again, clinicians, parents get that wrong, that they think it's behavioral or defiant, or they're being difficult, or they're just being picky or disordered eating, but it's actually usually a sensory thing. And then perfectionism and the OCD tendencies, that is definitely a overlap point where ADHD and autism, that's the, middle bit of the Venn diagram, where basically the nervous system is trying to create control through the perfectionism and OCD in a world that feels wildly out of control and overwhelming, but it can't because, we all know you can't control everything, which is inherently what's challenging about being a perfectionist or OCD is you can't control everything. And then the executive function challenges, which some of you list the some of those you listed already, looks like laziness or defiance, starting tasks, finishing tasks, sequencing, doing, multi-step stuff. That's another thing that is much more girl ADHD, autistic centric. So basically, for the school to say that they don't think she would meet criteria says to me that that clinician doesn't know how to find it and articulate it, if that makes sense. So some of the psychologists that I work with here that do assessments, I'm very particular about who I work with and who I refer to because I know that they are good at finding it. Where me, the parents, maybe a teacher go like, I really think there's autism going on or ADHD going on, but when I look at the criteria, I can't, she doesn't totally fall into it. And one of my colleagues, Marissa, is legit in that way. She will often be like, I found it. And then she'll explain how she can work it out with social stuff or communication stuff or conflict management or navigating emotions. You just got to find a clinician who can find it in the criteria. And that often just means you might have to have more sessions with them where you talk about challenges. And you don't necessarily have to have the kid there because I think sometimes it can be quite shamey for the kid. But the parents can often just say, like, this is what happens when they get wet socks, or this is what happens when they don't get their way when they're playing Monopoly, or I don't know, whatever. And those examples often will help paint the picture for the clinician to be able to find it and prove it in the diagnosis.
If you're a parent or a professional who works with children and you want my help in improving things with the kiddos in your life, or if you're simply a human being feeling kind of stuck and maybe kind of overwhelmed, my online programs have lots of resources, transformative content, one-on-one coaching, group coaching, and a supportive community. If you want to learn more, just go to HeidiRogers.com. All right, friends, thank you as always for tuning in today. Our time is our most precious asset, so I truly appreciate you sharing your time with me. I'll see you right back here for the next episode of Tell the Others.